Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of The Period Party. Today, Nat and I are talking to Kim and Amy Sedgwick. They are co-founders of the Red Tent Sisters, a business that has been providing holistic fertility, sexuality, and contraceptive solutions since 2007, which is amazing. Our topic for today is eco-woman, and that we're going to be covering natural choices for birth control, sexuality, and menstruation. So welcome to this episode, Amy and Kim. Really excited to have you guys.
Thanks so much for having
us.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks for joining
us, Gail. I know. I feel like we're all going to be just talking all over each other.
It's
going to
be
so fun.
Yeah. It's going to be battle of the marks.
It's all good. And just so everyone knows who you guys are, I wanted to share really quickly. Amy is trained as a holistic reproductive health practitioner, and she specializes in helping women ditch the pill and adopt natural, effective birth control, woman after my own heart. And Kim runs their sister business, ecosex.ca, and this is Canada's first eco-friendly sexuality store, which is so cool. And she coaches women who are ready to begin claiming and communicating their erotic desires. So we're going to have so much to talk about on this episode. We're covering natural alternatives to hormonal birth control, environmental and health concerns associated with the sex toy industry, environmental concerns related to menstrual products, which is a huge concern for many of us, as well as the best menstrual health products for the environment and your own health. So I guess we should just jump right in.
Well, I have a question.
Sounds good.
Straight up.
Oh, go for it, Nat.
I have to stand here. How many eco-friendly sexuality stores are there actually existing?
So that's a great question. So it's changed a lot. So we opened EcoSex in 2009, so about 2 years after we started Red Tent Sisters. And at that point, it was pretty much impossible to find eco-friendly products. Like, they were really, really hard to find. But that said, I'd say in, like, the last few years, the industry has really changed, and now it's a lot easier to find those products. So there are, as far as we know, there's only a couple other stores that specialize in eco-friendly products, but I'd say most sex stores now actually have, like, a section of their business dedicated to eco-friendly products just because there's a lot more demand for them. I think consumers are a lot more aware of the problems associated with mainstream toys, and they're demanding better options. So the nice thing is that it is becoming more mainstream. But as far as we know, there's only one store that's dedicated in Canada, and I know there's a couple in the U.S. I'm not sure about worldwide.
I can tell you in Australia, I've never heard of anything like that. So, it's pretty cool.
We'll need to create another location then. We'll have Australia and Red Tent
Sisters. We can hang up now. You can just come to Australia. Oh, good. We're done. Okay.
Ecosex.au. I feel like we need to just go into, I'm fascinated by this whole topic on environmental concerns related to birth control methods. Like, I would love for you guys to break that one down, because I don't think anybody really has a good understanding of that.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to take that one. So one of the things that's really interesting that most people have never thought of is that research on aquatic ecosystems is now showing feminization effects on fish and other kind of aquatic species based on the fact that we are basically like creating all of these artificial hormones into the water system through taking hormonal contraception. So there's this whole feminizing of fish and aquatic, like aquatic life, basically. So that's one that most people don't ever think about, which is really concerning. Another is, of course, like the waste involved in lots of other forms of birth control. So, I mean, obviously condoms are really important for STI protection, but there is waste associated with them. And so, you know, in terms of other barrier methods that are like reusable, you know, the diaphragm has really kind of gone out of vogue, but we think that it's important that people consider that as an option, as well as the cervical cap, because they're both reusable, which is great. But the main thing, you know, like the the biggest percentage of people in terms of contraceptive use are using hormonal birth control, and that does have effects in terms of wildlife.
And is that from women just like peeing and flushing the toilet, or actually like throwing birth control pills down into the toilet? Like, what is that, or a combination of the two?
Yeah, probably a combination, but probably more through excretion. So probably a combination of urine, and then also from fecal matter, because we also excrete through basically the liver processes that out hormones, and then we excrete through the bile.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, wow, that's wild, Alrighty. Isn't it? I'm fairly sure most people that are on the pill or some type of synthetic contraception would never consider.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah, like in our experience, when it comes to... Go ahead.
No, go for it.
I was going to say that I feel like when it comes to hormonal birth control, we have a lot of clients who say, you know, they're thinking about their plastic water bottles and they're changing their cleaning products and they're only using glass food containers. Like, they're thinking about their environment from all of those perspectives, and they often say that ditching hormonal birth control and adopting something that's more environmentally friendly is kind of like the last frontier, sort of the last thing that they think of, just because I don't think that there's a lot of awareness about the effect that hormonal birth control has on the environment. And of course, the effect it has on the environment of, like, our personal environment of the, you know, our bodies, that's a whole other issue, which I know you've talked about on the podcast before.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ad nauseum.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm just, you know how it goes. I'm curious about this because I feel like there are obviously a lot of other endocrine disrupting chemicals in our environment as well. So I'm curious about, like, how much our birth control methods are playing a role versus, you know, things like all of these endocrine disrupting chemicals that are in our cosmetics and, you know, that kind of thing, and like plastics and whatnot. So I imagine it's a relatively big role because there are lots and lots of women who are on hormonal birth control.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, there's going to be a huge effect because I can't remember what the stats are, but it's very high. Like, I think of people of reproductive age who are using birth control, it's like, I think something like 80% of them are using hormonal contraceptives. So it's something high. I can't pull that stat out, but I know it's very high. So there's definitely that issue. And then in terms of our health, of course, the impact of taking like an actual literal drug that has higher than normal amounts of a hormone that's naturally circulating in our body, you know, it's a lot. Like, in terms of looking at the cumulative effect of other things in our environment, like maybe our plastic containers or whatnot, you know, the fact that we're actually taking an entire pill that's the whole thing, it's just hormones, right? So I think that's why a lot of people, like, as Kim said, they're detoxing all of these, you know, xenoestrogens from their environment, and then suddenly they go to take their pill and they're like, whoa, hold on, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah, that happens a lot. I find that a lot with patients. They're like, you know, they change everything and then they're like, oh, hang on a minute, I'm actually on the pill.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big deal. They need to make, I mean, I guess you can't. I'm just sitting here thinking, what? They need to make a condom that's reusable. Like, seriously, but it'd have to be really thick, I guess, wouldn't it? And then that would probably be so great. I don't know. I just feel like, yeah, off topic slightly.
No, but I think that, I think it's interesting that you're getting invented right now. There's got to be a way to do that.
Well, the fact
that
you're
that would be the most appealing option. Yeah, I feel like it would be the most appealing.
Hilarious.
Like, that would be like, you know, most people are like, oh, yeah, excellent, a reusable condom. Like, I don't know, it's kind of gross, but, well, it's got to be better for the environment as well. Anyway.
I don't know if you guys have, if anyone's attempting to do that, but it certainly doesn't sound super sexy.
Just saying, but I agree. Because that is clearly a problem.
Most people argue that nor does a cervical cap seem super sexy either, but it's essentially the same thing in reverse, isn't it, really?
Well,
it's
not really something that would go for STI protection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, I advocate for the cervical cap, but they're not available in Australia. You have to buy them online and you have to get them usually from the US or, you know, offshore. Then you can't buy them here. Can you buy them over the counter?
You can get them in Canada and the US. I know in Canada you don't need to have a prescription. I believe in the US you do. But the
you need
issue
a prescription?
With As far as I know,
we do. We need a prescription for a diaphragm as well.
Yes, but you can barely get a diaphragm in the U.S. now.
That
I mean, it's
is
I've
madness.
Had friends. Yeah, I go to so many doctors. It's incredible.
Because they would try and talk you into the pill. Like every GP, well, not every, that's very general. I take that back. Most GPs do not advocate for any other form of contraception other than either a Mirena, an Implanon, or the pill. And even then they try and steer you towards an Implanon or a Mirena because it's more permanent and they don't have to worry about, you know, you being human and stuffing up and not taking it, and heaven forbid, you know, you have to be accountable for that. You know, the amount of women that I see that say, oh, I don't have an option. My doctor won't take it out. They won't take out my Mirena, or they won't, you know, they won't hear for me not to be on contraception because, oh, my goodness, I'm going to fall pregnant when I sniff someone. I can't imagine how it would be to get a prescription for the diaphragm or a cervical cap. Like, I can't see how that would even happen.
Well, we hear all the time from clients that they're really shamed by their doctor if they say that they're using a non-hormonal method of birth control, particularly if they say that they're using fertility awareness. I know I'll let Amy talk to this more, but we hear that story all the time, that they tell their doctor that that's what they're using, and the doctor will say some form of, well, I hope you're planning to get pregnant. You know, that there's really very little support for that option, for that choice.
Constantly. I hear it all the time. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, how dare you understand your body, you stupid human, you? Like, what would you know about yourself? I know better. Like, it's so dark ages. Like, seriously.
I know. It's unbelievable. I mean, but women, I hear it all the time as well as you guys do. Like, women constantly are, like, they're kicked out of their doctor's offices. They're embarrassed. They're shouted at. I mean, for using fertility awareness. It's nuts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That same old method that they've used for thousands of years suddenly starts to fail. Not.
Exactly.
Get how to use it. Like, you know, people just forgotten. Seriously. It's just so frustrating. So, I mean, obviously,
it is.
You know, natural fertility awareness methods is what we're all advocating for. Does someone want to, for our new listeners, someone want to talk a little bit more about, you know, what we're talking about?
Yeah, sure.
I wasn't sure
if you were going to ask a question. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead. So, to describe a little bit about fertility awareness methods and what I teach, is that good to do now, or are you thinking a different direction?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah. So I teach in particular the GISTIS method of fertility management. So it is a symptothermal approach to fertility awareness methods. So I'm teaching my clients to check for cervical mucus, take their temperature, and then if they wish to also check their cervix. So the way I always describe it to my clients is that, you know, the vagina is naturally too acidic to support the survival of sperm. So it's really that slippery cervical mucus that looks like egg white that appears usually several days in advance of ovulation that allows sperm to actually survive. And it doesn't just change the pH, but it actually creates what I jokingly call like a sperm superhighway. It has like these little microscopic roadways in the mucus to help the sperm actually to get up into the uterus. So really kind of the open destiny, closed destiny of fertility. So learning to chart that with incredible accuracy will enable, you know, couples basically to control their fertility.
So it's like a slipstream to the egg.
That's right.
I know. I feel like we're just so accommodating our women's bodies.
Yeah,
I know, right?
It's so like well coordinated.
It's so funny. I think the other thing that I find hilarious about fertile mucus and the cervical crypts is that when I was studying a long time ago these methods, I learned also that the sperm actually sit in the cervical crypts and have a little rest and feed off the mucus before they get back on the highway again and keep going. I'm like, oh, this is
so typical
of a male. Like they, you know, they're catapulted out into this environment perfect for them to just get the job done, yet they're going to have a little rest on the sideline before they get back to business.
Yes, I jokingly tell my clients it's like a little mucus spa that they go and hang out in for a while.
Oh,
Oh, good times, I tell you. Like I said, we're so accommodating.
Here at the cervical mucus bar. That's so funny.
That's awesome. I'm going to have to use that from now on. The cervical mucus bar.
So, Amy, is there... Oh, sorry, Nat. I was just going to ask
if there was anything else that you wanted to share around, like, the natural alternatives. And, like, I think the biggest problem for so many women coming from the conventional hormonal birth control methods is that, I mean, the looks I get are like, Nicole, you want me to do what? Like, you want me to look at my cervical fluid? Are you kidding? Or you want me to take my temperature every day? Have you lost your mind? I mean, I'm sure you've come up with like a million of these kinds of things before. Is there, do you have a rehearsed speech that you give them or some kind of
deal? What's your elevator pitch with regards
to? Well, you know what's interesting is most of the people I get inquiring about the method have like done a fair bit of research already, and I actually don't really get like a lot of people who are grossed out by the concept. What I really get, and maybe this is just like top of mind for me today because I had a conversation with a client about this last night, it's just a lot of people really struggling. Like, they really want to do this, they believe in the method, they believe it works, but they have these reservations just because we have grown up in this super ultra contraceptive culture where we're kind of taught that you can get pregnant anytime, anywhere. And so even if you know logically that the method works and you understand the science behind it, there's still just this fear factor about relying on our bodies because we're so taught to be afraid of our bodies, you know? And so I feel like
Amen.
A lot of people, yeah. And so many people who come to me who are kind of in that kind of pre-decision phase, that's really their concern. Like, they're really... they're kind of stressed about how to take that giant leap of faith off of pharmaceuticals into actually trusting themselves and their bodies. And that's really tough. And it takes a lot of unworking. Like, I was talking with this client last night about just, like, keeping a journal and just writing about it, and just there's so much stuff coming up for her about it. And there are other issues that come up, too, like just anger, you know, anger at ourselves sometimes for having been on these things for so long. Like, I was on it for a decade. Anger at the medical system that, like, prescribes this without proper informed consent. Just, like, there's just so much that comes up through the process of fertility awareness, I find, that goes, like, so far beyond birth control. And I think that the conscious minds are aware of that, and they really need to feel ready for it. And so what I do is a lot of, like, coaching around how to combine fertility awareness with other methods of birth control to kind of, like, help ease people into the process. So, you know, using a combination of, like, condoms, withdrawal, abstinence, selective abstinence, alternative sexual practices, like, talking to clients about how they can, you know, combine this with other methods of birth control in a way that makes them feel comfortable as they kind of, like, gradually ease into trust of their body.
Yeah,
and I just
want to
add
so
to what
important.
Amy... Yeah, and just to add to what Amy was just saying, I think there's a huge lack of support and why we're so passionate about doing this work and the way in which Amy teaches it, where she provides the one-on-one instruction, but also the group calls and the private Facebook group, is that women often do feel very alone in this choice. And if they're not being supported by their healthcare practitioner, sometimes their partner has reservations and they might not have any friends or other acquaintances to talk to about this. So that's why we're really passionate about, like, the group component of learning this, is I really think that it does bring up a lot of emotions, as Amy mentioned, and I think there needs to be a safe space for that to be witnessed and to be supported.
I love
that
so much.
Perfect. I think, I mean, a lot of women are so hesitant. I have the same reservations. I just use myself as an example. I'm like, I have two children. They were conceived the month that we tried for each of them. One's got a birthday today, actually. And that's it. I'm done. And I'm not on contraception. And I don't have my tubes tied. My husband hasn't had the snip. And we're okay. Like, no one's freaking out month after month. We're testament to the fact that this works. And I think that, you know, when you can connect with like-minded people, like you're saying, and when there is a community, you can come together and feel safe and feel secure and know that what you're doing isn't woo-woo. It's not, anything other than understanding the way that your body works and utilizing that information, you know, to either influence conception or use it as contraception. It's really as simple as that.
I totally agree. Absolutely. I mean, I feel, yeah, I mean, for me, I use myself as an example as well. I've been doing this for 10 years after I got off the pill, and, you know, I'm not pregnant, but that's by choice. So, you know, I feel like what you said brings up so much for real. Like, it's really, at the end of the day, not even about the birth control so much for many of the women, I imagine, who come to you and who come to all of us. I hear a lot of anger from women as well, too. I bet you do as well, Nat, just from feeling like I was on this for so long and I was told to do this and I had no idea what I was getting myself into, especially if they're experiencing infertility or amenorrhea or some other severe issue, maybe gut health issue, something like that. So I really appreciate you sharing that, because I believe that we just need to continue to educate people. And you were mentioning in the beginning of the episode, like, you know, 80%, that number is just so high. I was thinking in my head, like, wow, we really just have our work cut out for us as a group of practitioners.
Every day. Every day. It is, you know, it is mind-boggling. But, you know, there's so many women that are, like you said, they are. They're scared into believing that this is the only option. I think the other thing we have to say is that if you are on the pill and you choose to do that, do it from an informed place. Like, understand what that means. What are the ramifications? What are the, you know, all of these things that we're speaking about? And then you can make that choice going, okay, I'm okay with that. Or actually, no, I'm not okay. And not from a place of going, well, I just got told to do it and everybody else is doing it. So, you know, I mean, peer pressure, eat your heart out.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Okay.
That's why we're here, obviously.
Yes, right. This is, you know, this is what we're doing, our mission on the planet. Okay, so I feel like we should probably switch gears a little bit. Amy, I don't know if you have anything final to add around natural alternatives or natural birth control alternatives, things like that.
No, I'm good. I mean, I think, yeah, I know there's lots of other content we want to get to, and I could talk about this all day, so let's move on.
I know, seriously. I know. I feel like we should have scheduled an hour. But anyways, we should go over. It's all good. So, Kim, I am, like, fascinated also by the environmental and health concerns associated with the sex toy industry, because if there were no people talking about environmental concerns for birth control methods, there are definitely nobody talking. There's definitely no one talking about the sex toy industry. So I would love to hear all of this. Tell us.
Yeah, for sure. So I'll start with just sort of the story of how we got into this. So we opened our physical storefront almost a decade ago. And when we had a physical store, we had demos of the products out on the shelf. So all the toys were out of their packaging so people could see what they looked like. And we were opening up the packaging. And I turned to Amy and I was like, I'm like, they smell really funky. Like, it had that new car smell. So we started doing some research and we discovered that smell was off-gassing. It was the chemicals from the sex toys. And then some further research revealed that the sex toy industry is not actually regulated. I don't know where it is in other countries. I'm assuming the same as in Canada, where they're sold as novelty items. So basically that means that manufacturers don't have to disclose the ingredients and they don't have to ensure that the product is safe for use. So I always say, you know, some people are buying these toys as gay gifts, really as a novelty item for, you know, like a bachelor party or whatever. But most people, especially with the kinds of toys that we were selling, these were actually going into very porous parts of the body. And it was very concerning, the chemicals that were in there. And this was around the same time that our mother was diagnosed with estrogen-dependent breast cancer. It was around the same time that Amy had just had her daughter. So she was really concerned about the things that she was using for her daughter. And so all this kind of came together and we were thinking about all these endocrine disruptors, and one of them being the phthalates that were used in sex toys. So phthalates are the chemical used to soften plastic to give them that sort of jelly-like feeling. And they are banned actually in kids' products, but they're not banned in sex toys. And so we just became really passionate about informed consent. So actually kind of ties in with what we were just talking about with the birth control, is that I think that there's a lot of people who unknowingly were buying these products.
And so we did a lot of education around sort of what to look for to make sure that these products were environmentally friendly. And the other issue for us around them being called novelty items is they're not really like well made. So they weren't really intended to be used long term. So people are buying these toys, they're working for, you know, maybe not even a month, and then being thrown out and ending up in landfills. And so we just really became passionate about, making sure that these are not ending up in landfills, so not causing more garbage than is necessary. And then also just making sure that they're not causing, you know, allergic reactions and problems for people's health. And so we did quite a lot of campaigning. We actually got a member of parliament on board with us, and we did a huge campaign lobbying the government to try and make it so that phthalates were banned. That was not successful, but it was successful in the sense that there was a huge media blitz around that time, and it raised a ton of awareness. And as I mentioned at the beginning of this call, we've seen a huge shift in the industry in the last 10 years. I'd say most companies now, even if they don't exclusively make eco-friendly products, they'll at least have some that are phthalate-free. And they are tending to be just better made because people are using them for longer. So I'm really happy to see that trend, and I'm curious to sort of see where it goes in the future.
That is awesome. What a cool story. Like Nat was saying, there's no eco-friendly sex toy business in all of Australia. And I imagine that's the case for the like 99.9% of countries on this planet. So I feel like this is such a huge movement. It's so true. I was just talking about phthalates today because I'm writing a blog post on feminine wipes. Yeah, those things. Anyways, you know, and it's like incredible how they're in everything. They're in breast tissue. They're in this, they're in that. So the fact that you guys are pushing to get them out of sex toys and other things is just awesome.
Yeah, and I'll just quickly add to that the other thing that we did a lot of education around and we're really concerned about is the parabens and lubricant. Because of course, again, another endocrine disruptor and, you know, again, going into a very porous part of your body. And so I'm really happy to report that, again, I've seen a huge shift in a lot of lubricants, even like Astroglide and some of the mainstream brands have paraben-free options now. And I think a lot of people are more aware of that. But there's also typically tons of ingredients in lubricants that can cause allergic reactions. Like, I don't know who's making these products that they're not thinking this through, like putting sugars in lubricant that's then going into the vagina. I'm like, hello, yeast infections. Kind of blows
my mind. Oh, my God. Unbelievable.
They're putting in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had no idea. I didn't think they were putting clearly, I'm not, like, up with all the awesome sex toys and stuff, but like I didn't know they were putting sugar in lubricants. That's nuts.
It's pretty ridiculous. We often we get customers coming in saying like, oh, I have allergies to lubricant, and it's not that you're allergic to lubricant like full stop, it's just that like most mainstream ones have those ingredients, and then they switch to, you know, a paraben glycerin free lubricant and the problem would clear up. So yeah, that's why we like to share that little tidbit, because it's something a lot of people don't know.
Absolutely. I had no idea. I'm so blown away by that, by all of it. I will say, when it comes to, you know, like the environmental concerns related to our menstrual products, I feel like a lot of people are, well, maybe not a lot. I don't know. I feel like women are more aware of these kinds of things, like, just the ingredients in them and their impact. And, like you said, vaginal tissue is basically the most absorbent tissue in your body, and it's also very, very sensitive. So having these products anywhere near that tissue for extended periods of time can be really detrimental. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say that's another thing that I'm excited about, how that process is evolving, because I remember it used to be really hard to get things like the Diva Cup is the one that's available for sale in Canada in terms of being Health Canada approved, but there's dozens and dozens of different menstrual cups that are available now. And I think there is a lot more sort of mainstream awareness around it. And I know Amy and I are huge fans of a company called Luna Pads, which makes reusable menstrual pads and really cute reusable underwear that have like a pad built right into them. So that's the other thing we like to let people know about, is that there's different options. Like if you're not comfortable using a cup, that there are reusable pads, there's underwear with the pad built right in, or if you're not comfortable using a reusable product, then even just switching to a brand of organic cotton tampons or pads is also like a good sort of stepping stone if you're not quite ready for a reusable product. So again, it's like everything that we're passionate about. It's just letting people know all the different options that are available, and it's your readiness and what's going to fit for you and your lifestyle. But I'm really excited. I mean, the fact that all this stuff is becoming more popular. I think it was last week that Amy, do you remember which magazine that was? Was it Newsweek that had There Will Be Blood on the cover?
Oh, yeah.
That I sent? Yep. Yeah.
Yes.
So just that menstruation is being talked
about
more. I was super impressed. Yeah, it was incredible. And they had a picture of a tampon right on there. And so I just think these conversations are becoming more mainstream and people are aware of the environmental and sort of health impacts of using these mainstream products and are learning that there's so many other options out there.
Sorry,
and also just recognizing that there's like, sorry, I was just going to say, and that there's great cost savings involved too. So it's not just that you're doing a good thing for the environment, but it's you know, helpful for your bottom line and your budget too, these reusable products, which I think is great.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's a win-win-win. It's better for your body, better for the earth, and better for your pocketbook. It's rare that you get all three of those things.
Yeah, I know. It's like the perfect triple bottom line.
That's right. And very similar to what Kim was saying in terms of like how we've seen the industry, sex toy industry change so much, and now like a lot of the things that we're carrying are not like niche anymore because they are becoming more mainstream, which is a good sign because it means there's a lot of demand. And we're seeing the same thing with menstrual cups. Like when we first opened our business, like it was totally rare that we like we were carrying them, but most people who came in had never heard of menstrual cups and there was barely anywhere else to get them. But now you can get Diva cups pretty much in any like drugstore. Isn't that right, Kim? They're carrying them in Shoppers now, I think, right?
They're carrying them in Shoppers Drug Mart.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, they carry them all over the U.S. too, like in all the...
Yeah, right.
Are you guys, is that not the case in Australia now? Because
no,
we have them in all our
drugstores
too. I just saw them today.
No. Most things are online for us still. We're still living in the dark ages over here. We are in the butt end of the world, so, you know, it's okay. These things take time.
I know, you guys are very far. You're far away. Agreed.
I know, we really are. We're
but
far.
Still,
we're really far.
Is that just because of regulation?
We have half an hour. We could keep on talking, I know, but you guys, we have actually been on our call for half an hour. Do you guys have anything else you wanted to add before we say goodbye to each other today?
Well, I just want to thank you so much for having us on. It's been a great conversation, and it's always lovely to connect with other fellow menstrual advocates. So thank you.
Absolutely. So maybe tell our listeners again just whether they can find you, because you know, I don't immediately hang up and go and research and continue to educate themselves. So where are they able to find you guys?
Yeah, so there's a few different places. I mean, almost everything is on our website, which is just redtentsisters.com. And there's a link from there to our sister site, which is ecosex.ca. So that's where we carry products. And then we're also on all the social media, so Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of those at Red Tent Sisters.
Perfect. Well, Amy and Kim, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been pretty cool to have you. And you know what? I've learned a lot today. I don't know about you, Nicole.
Oh, yeah. I'm, like, blown away by all this information. I feel like we could seriously have talked for an hour.
I know. But thanks, everyone, for listening. And until next time, we will be researching our little butts off to bring you some other really cool stuff as well.
Bye, ladies. Bye, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
See you later. Bye.